Thank you. Thank you for that, Peter. They asked me to do this, and they said you had 5 minutes, and I just chuckled. 5 minutes in a microphone don't necessarily compute. I've agreed, because I have a Polaroid of Scott Craig, that he could give me 4 of his minutes, so I'm going to cheat a little bit. What I'd like to start by saying is, you know, it's a good thing to be in health care and health IT now. There's an awful lot of us who struggled for a long time, especially in the federal sector, where the requirements and the needs were very high and the funding and the attention was not nearly as high. And I think that has reversed recently, and now it changes the playing field, and it requires us to step our game up in terms of, you know, we've asked for more resources, we've asked for more attention, more funding, and guess what? We're getting it. So it's really incumbent upon us to know how to be visionary and also to be practical about how we use this attention and use the funding to the best outcomes. It isn't going to be there forever. There are other needs and requirements, so it's good to be in health IT at the moment. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about a report that we recently did for the VA, but also for VVIC and Anish. ACT-IACT, a firm is an affiliate of a group called the American Council for Technology and the Industry Advisory Council. Those organizations have been around 30 and 20 years respectively as well. VVIC asked IACT to come in, and he had a series of questions for them, and one of them was, could you guys help us with the industry perspective on how do you take these large legacy systems and move them into the 21st century? Would you be willing to step up to that? And the IACT board said, yes, we would, and he pointed us specifically at the VA. And so we got a charter from Roger Baker at the VA. He asked us a series of questions. He asked for an industry's perspective on how you might modernize VISTA. So we took 42 member companies. We took executives from them, from each one of those 42 companies. We asked them to take their company hat off, as was said earlier, and put their industry expert hat on, but more importantly, put their citizen hat on. What is in the best interest of the citizen? We started the journey last October. We took 6 months. We broke it up into 3 2-month segments. We educated ourselves. Then we argued for about 2 months. And then we came up with a series of recommendations. The thing I'm probably most proud about the recommendations are that they're unanimous. We gave a industry unanimous set of recommendations to Roger. We were also asked to, as we did this, if we were able to create a model that could be replicated in other situations where there are large legacy programs, understand what it is about legacy programs that make it so hard to move them and to shape them and to take advantage of the newest technologies and address that as we addressed VISTA. I think I'm very proud of the result. It's available to anyone. It's up on the IACT website. That's actgov.org. It's about 103, 104 pages. It's 6 months worth of really interesting consulting. And I mentioned Roger's, one of his comments to us when we delivered the report to him on May 4th. He said, I'm really excited about the dialogue that this report will create, the opportunity to get people talking about the real issues. Whether or not he accepts any or some of the recommendations certainly is his call. But he really said that this kind of a unanimous recommendation come from an industry is a real challenge, but it's really it's a real opportunity for government to take a look and see what of these are available. What of these recommendations are available for him to implement, but actually then to take it elsewhere in government and see there are other problems like that hopefully can be addressed. We're out talking to folks. We're getting great feedback. So with that as sort of a context, we have three gentlemen who are in the thick of it. And as I was talking to some of them, you know, theory hits reality where they live. And it's always an interesting prospect. They get a lot of free advice, but at the end of the day, the responsibilities are theirs, and so they have to deal with all the issues and try to move forward as best they can. Sometimes dragging a long tail of legacy situations and the like. So this is these folks are not, none of these folks are rookies. So what I'd like to challenge you before we ask them to come up is be thinking about some hard questions. No softballs. You know, do you floss daily? You know, it's not going to help the dialogue that we're really trying to create. We're trying to get, whatever the outcome, we're trying to get the real issues on the table and give these folks some assistance in terms of best ideas, best practices, what the industry thinks, how this may all work out. So while they're speaking, please be thinking about some tough questions, not embarrassing, but tough questions that get to the, as you understand it, the point of the various issues. I'm going to ask John to come up first. The way we're going to work this is going to ask Scott, who was our liaison at the VA. He got us the resources we needed as we did our report. I'm going to ask him to talk about a complimentary effort he was involved with internal to VA. But ask John to start. I'm going to ask Captain to then maybe give us some best practices and lessons learned as we go through it. So, John?
Why don't we have everyone come out to sit up front?
Yeah.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I just want to get a little bit of a pulse from the crowd here. How many people have physicians that still use paper records? Okay, I do. I do. I've got a surgeon that still uses paper records. And when I talk to him about electronic health records, he just shakes his head and he says, well, I don't even know where to start, and he waves his hand at these banks of paper records that he's developed over the period of years. So now how many people also have a physician that has an electronic system of some type? Okay, so it's getting more. How many people have a physician who participates in a plan within which they can exchange electronically health information about the people that are participating in the plan? Okay, so much fewer, much fewer. So stop and think about a time when you not only can exchange information across a plan, so Kaiser Permanente, big organization, they can exchange information, you know, fairly well. A number of people, a number of the large health organizations can exchange information pretty well. But we're a fairly transient society. And so people move around, they travel. Ed and I were talking about how much he traveled over an 18-month period one time, where he was in multiple places of the country every week. So then let's talk about the events that are in our past, thankfully, of the devastation of Katrina. How many of you were involved in developing capabilities to collect information from those that had been displaced so that they could get the health care they deserved? Okay, there's a couple of you. Thank you for that. But stop and think about this. In a time when you have electronic health records, in a time when you have a longitudinal perspective on someone's health, if something like that happened, then you could go to to that capability, and you could say, okay, what are the prescriptions that this person, maybe they're fairly aged, maybe they're taking multiple prescriptions. I don't know about you all, but I can't remember all of the prescriptions that my parents take. And so stop and think about having that capability. How many of you have walked into a doctor's office and had them say, when was the last tetanus shot that you ever had? You know? And how many of you had the answer? Nobody. Oh, naturally. Leslie back there, you know, we all know. But these are the types of things that are very commonplace in the treatment paradigm nowadays, but we don't accommodate them through the use of technology that we have at our disposal. So that kind of lays the groundwork. And so what are we doing about it? So we first had an executive order that said, thou shalt implement electronic health records. Well, then we had a Recovery Act that says, thou shalt implement electronic health records. Well, now we've got a Health Reform Act that says you'll not only reform healthcare, but in the process, you'll use electronic health records. Now, we don't have them in place. So we have to, at HHS, what we're doing is we are taking a look within the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT at the electronic health record process. We are taking a look at the business processes around that. We're taking a look at the data standards surrounding that and the standard vocabularies, I might add. And then we're taking a look at the standard services that might be necessary to allow that information to be used in meaningful ways. So you've all heard the term meaningful use. So there's a bunch of those. So when we do these things, what does that do? Well, now we've got a common framework that we can push out and we can make available to everyone, because we were having a discussion at the table about open source. So anybody heard of the Nationwide Health Information Network? Okay. Anybody ever have people that participated in the code-a-thons that are going on in that respect? Okay, so there's several folks there. So this is an opportunity for us to bring our collective intelligence to the table and develop an open source capability. I think there will be others that will talk about this as well. But now we've got something that we can build from. And, you know, it's like the old story of, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You want one bite at a time? Well, that's the process that we have to engage in. We have to have this open source capability that implements, you know, industry standards, all the vocabularies associated with that. We need to do that in a structured way, and we need to bring all of that to the table so that incrementally we can have this physician plug in or that plan plug in. And we need to do this incrementally and in concentric circles, maybe based on communities. I was having a discussion about different communities of practice. Maybe you get a community that comes together. So anyway, so what are we doing to help make that happen? At HHS, we have a program of incentives that we would love to have people participate in. Starting in 2011, our Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services will be providing incentive payments to those that adopt meaningful use of electronic health records. And so that's the carrot. And then you get to 2014. And so there you go. There's the stick, right? And so at that point, then you start to have disincentives that are applied. And so, you know, we're trying to encourage, you know, early adoption of this. And in doing so, we have regional centers that have been established to allow for those that, like my physician, who doesn't know how to get started, that will allow them to have a resource to do this. And I think I should probably stop there. I've laid the groundwork, and I hope you've you guys have some questions, but I don't want to take up all the time because I could talk about this forever. So, Ed?
So let me do what I was supposed to do and at least do a brief introduction. I apologize, John. John Teeter is the Deputy Chief Information Officer, Department of Health and Human Services, and he has had a distinguished career. Let me go to Scott Craig. He's a Special Assistant to the CIO, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. I hired Scott, so I feel somewhat responsible. But Scott has played a very significant role at the VA. Many of you know him at Enterprise Architecture. He has taken on a new role, very important, I think, to the debate and the dialogue that's going on now. So ask Scott to come on up and talk about that. And then let me do it while I'm doing that. Our third speaker, Captain Michael Weiner, Chief Medical Officer for the Defense Health Information Management System. Did I get it? Did I do it wrong? All right. Weiner. Oh, sorry, Mike. I'm from Brooklyn. What can I tell you?
It's not good either way. It really doesn't matter.
Like, this isn't the first time. No, okay. Scott?
So I'm going to apologize because I'm going to use some notes. I normally wing it, but in my environment these days, winging it's not always a good thing. And, you know, I've been working in electronic health records and various other things for the last 12 months or so. And there was a stretch of time last year when every time I saw Mike, we were up on the hill being ambushed. And just because there's food in the room, I don't know how you're feeling, but I don't know yet what's going to happen here. My comments are my own. I just need to say that, okay? Not because the audience is made up of different types of people, but they're my own. I don't speak for Roger, and I certainly don't speak for the Secretary or the Deputy. But I'll share with you my thoughts on what we're doing at VA. First of all, if you're a veteran, family member to a veteran, or support veterans' causes, thank you. I appreciate it. It's very important, even more important to me now. My son came home 3 weeks ago and said, Dad, I'm joining the Army, and I want to go infantry. So thank you all for your contributions. Deep in my heart, I'm a propeller head, so I like to start with numbers just to kind of set the table. 306,000 employees at VA serving 25 million veterans, and that number is growing. Somewhere near 8 million accounts for benefits or health care, serving 6 million specific veterans. So we have a large cadre of people who depend on us. We have 150 hospitals or thereabouts. We had 153 until the hurricane, and we're building more because we need to. 800 clinics and other points of service, just under 70 regional offices. So our enterprise is pretty awesome. People there are phenomenal, and the cause is easy to rally behind. Since the arrival of Secretary Shinseki, he's been focused on getting us focused. And recently, we've spent a lot of time working on 13 major initiatives. And I'll tell you, if you're not lined up, if I'm not lined up with those initiatives, then you're not lined up with the Secretary. He's been very clear about that, and it's focus that we need. I think it's wonderful. Those initiatives include eliminating veteran homelessness, enabling 21st century benefits in the delivery of or automating the GI Bill, creating the virtual lifetime electronic record, which is very important to the work that I'm doing, building the Veterans Relationship Management System so that we can move into more seamless interactions with our veterans, improving veteran mental health, and expanding health care to more women in rural areas in the United States. So we have very, very tall orders to fill, and we'll figure out a way to do it. We have to. That's what we do. I'm going to talk to you, or my comments will center on Vista open source and what we're doing there. I'm a neophyte in the Vista arena, but I've been spending an awful lot of time understanding what the opportunities are for us when it comes to open source and what the potential is for us to get involved and be successful, as well as ensure that we can continue doing what we do. We're very proud of Vista. It's a wonderful system. It does what it does very well, and we think it's the best in class. For those of you who are not familiar with what we do with Vista, it is the foundational platform for how we deliver, collect, and treat veterans. Some of you may know it as CPRIS, which is the front end of Vista, but Vista is the architecture that sits behind, Ed, somewhere around 200 applications, depending on whose math you use. Yeah. Either way, big number of applications and capability for us. But what else is going on? Well, the footprint is massive, and the challenge that's been laid upon us, people like me and others, is how do we move Vista forward? How do we reinvigorate Vista? How do we challenge ourselves to be more innovative and carry that wonderful system forward? Vista is the best in its class, and so you can ask the question, why don't we share it? Why don't we do a better job sharing it? We share it today because the code goes out into the public domain, and some of you and your companies use it to advance healthcare and record systems in the private sector, in state and local government, and internationally. So Vista is just a wonderful tool for us to carry forward, and that's a challenge. And so open source for us is a methodology, it's a tool, and it's an option. In our past, we've followed traditional methods. So we've contracted with primes, and they've supported us wonderfully, but there's a lot more that we can do. And so we're searching, and we're going to find ways to engage new partners. I'm not saying that we're going to do open source. That's not for me to decide. My job is to frame the environment, the potential, the challenges, the risks, and to inform my leadership, and they'll make that decision. For up to me, I think I know which way I'd go. I think it would be truly exciting. Again, I apologize for sticking to the script, but I really do need to. I think you understand why. The things that I focused on, and I'll end with just a few more comments, have been governance, intellectual property, ecosystems, and the environments that are essential to open source success. For those of you who are already in the open source environment, you know what a lot of that means. But it's peculiar to us. It's asymmetrical. We don't normally do that in government. DOD has taken steps forward. We're certainly doing it at VA. We need to reach out, and we need to do all this while we ensure that everything we do today, the care we provide, the information collect, the successes we have, are not risked by anything that we do to expand and be aggressive. So it's a wonderful time for us to move forward. It's a wonderful time for Vista. There's a great hope for the future and what we can do. It's a really good time, and I would encourage you all to pay attention to what we do. The ACT IAC report was outstanding. We've ingested it. We've read it. We've sat and spent much time with Ed and his counterparts. That report did some outstanding stuff. Apologize for the use of that word, but stuff. There's a lot of stuff in it. And I'm pretty well aligned with where they went. I think there's some great recommendations there. I'll end it with this. Governance is huge for us. We have a role that's not just about development. It's not just about putting tools out there, but the role of the VA in the national strategy for the transformation of healthcare and what we can do to make it better is part of what we also have to take into consideration. So we've got a lot going on. Happy to answer questions. I'll end there. I think we'll make up a little bit of time. And thanks for your attention.
Hello. Test. Anyone? It's on. Yes. Don't worry about it.
The fire agency. Oh,
hello?
The fire accident.
Nothing. I'm not worried about it. I will agree with everyone. It's an exciting time to be in IT and healthcare. Exciting for...
Yeah, they want to use it. Bye-bye.
exciting for 444? Nothing? We're not going to make it happen today? Do I have to stand at the podium? Now? All right, good. So I agree it's a very exciting time in healthcare IT, for, well, two reasons. One's federal, one's non-federal. Federal because both the DOD and the VA have, on their own, and now thankfully together, have agreed that we all need to transform what we have into the next generation, and that's being worked in both organizations. As of yesterday, 2 days ago, the DOD signed off on a commitment to a new way ahead, an electronic health record way ahead. It's got a catchy new logo. Come take a look at my card. So that's for the federal. But for civilian, you know, we look at our federal organizations, DOD, VA. We're at 100% deployed. We've been deployed for years. And we look at our commercial civilian partners, and New England Journal of Medicine last year, last March, 1.7%. So when everybody raised their hand today, I was like, who are you going to see? Is everybody seeing the same physician? Because nobody has an electronic health record. I was duly impressed. 1.7% have a fully functional electronic health record. Maybe 17% use a little ordering, but that's it. So, you know, this is really going to be a boom time for healthcare IT for all of us. And why is that? Well, because it sort of came down from the top and it's the right thing. Why is it the right thing? So I think in our heart we all know that the electronic health records that we have that we're trying to go to will bring more value and provide better care, right? So I'm going to offer this up to the group. When you come in to see us, please. Value proposition is better care at a better cost. Simple as that. And everyone has a hard time with that discussion, right? We want to go to a regionalized data center because you will get better care. Right? There is a statement in there. There's a leap in there. So 148,000 times a day, we collect a new encounter, and we put it into one clinical data repository. That clinical data repository then share that data with our partners at the VA. So more non-billable data, healthcare data, is being shared between two organizations. So again, I think VA and DOD, amazing. So I always like to take a pause because we're, you know, every time we meet, we're always so interested in what we're doing next. I think we forget to sort of take a deep breath and go, holy cow, we've been doing this for 2-3 decades, and you know, the rest of the nation is just starting to wake up as we have this conversation. So where are we headed to? Well, we have some lessons learned over the years, and I'm going to share with you because I think everyone can help us. So we don't do coding. We buy coding. We buy. So I just love these opportunities to let everybody know where we're headed so you can then come back, partner with us, and help us along this journey. I mentioned regionalized data centers. We're taking our one giant data center, and we're going to distribute that load between, I've heard, 3 and 5. I would imagine 5 is going to be the number. But we'll see how that comes out for the enterprise. We're going to go to a service-oriented platform, right? So using the service-oriented architecture principles, we are moving forward on that. So help us with that. We are going to go to something different than what we have, right? We're working that as we speak. If you're new to the Department of Defense, there's a fairly elaborate acquisition process. It's not a, hey, Michael Weiner thinks this, let's get cracking, so bring out the checkbook. There are thousands of man hours that will go into this. But we're going to something new. With that new will come change in the change management. And I want to use that. It's a big word on a big concept. It means a lot of different things to different people. But what it means for us is we're going to take what we have now, our current workflow, and when you go to a new product, you have a new workflow. How do you take an entire organization of 77,000 users and bring them easily into that new workflow, right? The European EHR Consortium made their opening statement. Going to an electronic health record is a radical paradigm shift for an organization, right? And if it wasn't, then we wouldn't be at 1.7% in the nation, right? My colleagues want to do the right things for their patients and for themselves. So if it was intuitive and quick and easy to use across the board, everyone would have one. And if that change management was easy for a physician's office, they would make the change quickly. So help us make that next change. And then the final note is we are all committed to the sharing of data, right? I think we all understand, again, at our heart, and this has yet to be proven, but we all believe at our heart, at this giant transformation of the healthcare system, the cost will be offset by having data freely available, right? So I had a cardiac cath up in Maine. I now go down to Florida to catch some sun. I hope to be doing that in a few years. And I'm down in Florida, and I have some chest pain, and I roll into the ER. What would it take on a Sunday in today's world to get that cath report, that cardiac cath report? It would be a long process. I will tell you, they'd probably just get cathed again, right? And there's a cost associated with that. So I think we can deliver better care, safer care, and decrease cost by this connection to the nationwide health information network. We're committed to it. Our VA colleagues are committed to it. We sit hungrily waiting for the HHS to give us continued direction on it. We are working, if anyone has been with us, we're working down at Hampton Roads, down in the Norfolk area, as our next stage of connection to demonstrate success. And I think what we'll see over this year is we come together on standards, on a platform, we'll share data, and we will, I believe, transform the healthcare of the nation. And you're going to see it out of this group here in the federal community, and that will bleed over, spill over into our civilian colleagues. So with that, I look forward to talking to you all about that.
Okay, so while we're getting the questions and you're getting up your nerve to be the first one to get up and ask a question, I'll start with a question for them. So there's this bottle, typical genie in it. Three wishes, each get one. All right, so you have a wish. What would you change? What would you wish for that would make the biggest difference in what you're trying to do?
I'm going to jump on that one.
You got it.
So, and I think there's people in the room that could help us with this. Our biggest wish right now is on 70 terabytes of data, non-image data. So if anybody's a database person, I just want you to breathe that in for a second. 70 terabytes of data in one giant magic box. Our dream is to now to take that data, parse it out, free it up, free the data so that it can be used for better care. So what do our diabetics look like across a clinic? What do our diabetics look like across the hospital? Why are there outliers in that clinic? What do we need to do to add to those patients and drive down the healthcare costs, drive down, you know, in your congestive heart failure, your diabetics, your asthmatics, right? Simple. We free up the data, we can then make decisions about it. So clinical decision support and clinical business intelligence is our wish list right now.
I think for me, I'm in a little different place. Because we have to horizontally integrate so much information, if I could wave a wand and get one thing, it would be to stabilize and standardize identity management. Not access management, but identity management, because that's how I would need to correlate all of the data, all of the records, and I need to do it consistently each time. And it is no small challenge, and it is rife with anomalies, but there are a few things that fundamentally must be done, and identity management with accuracy and confidence at all times to me is just paramount.
Okay, I got it. If you took both of those things and extended those to the nation, I think that those are probably the two most important things. Harmonization of data in such a way that it can be presented for decision making. Because absolutely, you want to take a look at, you know, the trends across, certain areas or certain demographics. Because then with that information, you can shift from a treatment paradigm to a prevention paradigm. And so you can say, in this area of the demographic, we have maybe less instances of diabetes. And so you can say, okay, well, what caused that? What's the practice? What's the behavior that we want to incentivize that will allow that trend to be replicated in other areas? So now information that in aggregate leads you to effective decision making, I think is really the key here, and I think the technology will follow that. But getting a handle on the information is the big thing, I believe.
All right, who has the first question? And if you'd identify yourself, appreciate it.
I've made a commitment that all difficult questions will go to Scott.
So remember I said I was a propeller head? So today's discussion is going to be about thrust vectors, wingtip vortices, all right, and avionics. How's that? Two good points. Let me phrase my response this way. On the question of demographics and data analysis, and one very important point here is I'm a technology weenie, all right? And so we don't have a clinician on the – no, that's not fair. You can represent – would you represent that space or would you – But in this panel, all right, so the way we responded so far has largely been IT, right? And when you get into the workflow, right, that's a whole different ballgame, because workflow and demographics, while clinicians want both, when you're doing your primary job, it's a different focus area. So let me try to answer more briefly now. The statistical analysis and the things that come out of it, such as standards of care, all vitally important, hugely important. But there are certainly two sides to that equation, one being research, one being clinical care. As an IT weenie, it shouldn't matter to me. Now, I'm going to dodge this a little bit because I can't talk about where we're putting our dollars, especially at this stage of budget development. But clearly, that space has to be accommodated. We've got a long legacy of that, of analysis and research that we do at VA, and we do a lot of it at the national level because that is one of our many roles. So the question longer term for me is, and I'll kind of mealy-mouth it, getting back to identity management. I can't get there unless I know who the patient is. Right? I just can't, because I can't normalize the data. I can't bring it into focus. I can't synthesize new thoughts, new ideas. And then to take it a step further, if we're ever going to do predictive analysis, and I think you started to touch on that, while we're providing care in real time, then you've got to be able to align and orient all of that information. So I know I'm not answering your question, David, but
I'll just go off of, you know, Dr. Paul Tibbetts, who I think is just brilliant. And, you know, he is on, every time I see him speak, he talks about just patient-centric model, right? So I think the first part of what you were referring to is we really need a patient-centric model. So we are all spending a lot of time doing connections and standard, but why don't we just take all the data and hand it over to the patient, right? So I think there may be a philosophical change from this very paternal, we keep the data, to a new model, to a much more empowered patient who's connected all the time. Little, this is generational, right? My parents don't want the data. They want the physician to have it, but maybe that's going to shift. And then everything that the patient does all day long, every time they check their glucometer, that data is then sent up into that you know, these are all sort of coming down the pike with highs and lows, and when you go past the high, you're notified, the nurse calls you at home to find out what's going on, your daily weights for your congestive heart failure, if your weight goes up suddenly, you know, a notification goes. So I think a patient-centric model of an empowered patient is number one, and we all should be thinking about that and working to how to provide that to the patient. And number two is we go back, and, you know, I'll say, you know, true, and that's, this is the data. So we have, you know, nobody's got more data than the VA and the DOD. Right? I mean, no one. How are we freeing that up and then using it for population health? And on a big level, then on a lower level, how I, as a physician, how will that help me improve my practice in my own clinic? So, you know, I don't think we're mature and think there's opportunities there for better use of that data.
So the answer is yes. you know, this is an area that has gotten a lot of thought at HHS. So, you know, not so much implemented within plans, so to speak, at this point, because of the focus that we have now on rolling out the electronic health records in its very immature form right now. Just the beginnings of doing that. That's true, but it's, I think you begin with the end in mind, and so if you think about these things up front, then you have them in mind as potential requirements for the future. And so if you make decisions that will allow that to happen, then you're obviously in a better place as you move along. So one of the things that in a definition of electronic health record is the requirement for decision support. So very simply, you know, you have that type of a requirement. We've also got our Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that obviously has a huge interest in the population health perspective across, you know, the nation. And so driving decisions and programs might be a potential outcome of that as we move forward. But then I have also been talking to some folks who want to talk about the 360-degree information exchange. So, from a clinical setting, you know, you have a physician addressing a patient. There's certain information that they have. If they plug that into an electronic health record system that has, you know, some type of connection to whatever the capabilities are currently, maybe it's local, maybe it's regional, maybe in the future it's national. Then you have that information. Maybe it's a set of symptoms that are registered, and then that goes out, and you now have a population health perspective that sends back a message to that physician that says, this is something that is happening in your geographical area. You may want to consider it. And so there's this whole concept of exchange of information that if for multiple purposes that is currently in play now.
Let me just add something. In order to do evidence-based medicine, you need evidence. Cap talks about the 70 terabytes. That's a very unique population. It does not represent the people in this room. It represents typically young, healthy males. And so, you know, that's a good starting point. But someone has to then take the leap and deal with the 1.7% implementation. And I think that's what's going to be critical. HHS needs to set the ground rules, I think. And then, you know, there's large-scale applications that's being done at the VA and at DOD. But essentially, evidence isn't going to be there to do evidence-based medicine until we stop with the data wars and we just decide. And that's why I really love what Scott said. This notion of identity management, we got to get over ourselves. People say, I don't want a national record. That we fought the ID cards for the licensing, the driver's licensing. We got to get over that. We can't get there until we know who we're treating. And so there's some real political, not technical, not IT hurdles that I think need to be addressed.
Then you love what I said too, right?
I love what you said.
We all did.
Sir?
Hi, Graham with Harvard Medical. Genomic science, personalized medicine is where medicine is going. What are your plans to parse out disease data? Is it to put it in the cloud? Are you going to put it in the cloud so that researchers and developers can look at disease and develop personalized strategies and therapies for your vets that have, say, cancer? What are your plans to parse out data, demographics in one database in one part of the world and, of course, informatics with disease information? Are you planning on doing that, or?
This was specific to the vets environment?
Well, you got R&D people that do research on different diseases for the vets. And genomic science is personalized medicines. So if you can parse out disease information from demographic information, in other words, patient comes in, take their disease information, put it in one database away from their demographic information so that it'd be HIPAA compliant, and to do that, an open source, I think, is more of a cloud-based strategy, or is it a cloud-based strategy in your eyes? So that's basically my question.
I think what strategy we use is, I think you're already sort of way beyond where we are in this conversation. So the topic is, what about genomics, right? And the answer is, I'm going to go back. I will speak for the nation for 1 second. We still don't have an electronic health record, right? So I think genomics is, again, I like it. It pops up. I have to tell you, it pops up every place I go. The scientist in the room always pops up and says, "What about genomics?" And everyone's like, "But we don't have an electronic health record." So I'm gonna say that, but we don't have an electronic health record yet. So I think it needs to be built in, and we're talking about, you know, putting a module in down the line over that. But I still think our bread and butter is clinical care on a day to day. I don't want to take away from the research side of the house. And I think as we develop a product, now I'm going to circle it all around. Once we have a platform that we can plug and play into, I'm going to keep this simple IT talk, then we can plug in, whether it's a cloud or whether it's, you know, within our own secretive network, we can plug in a genomics module and we can begin to collect that data. I will tell you the issue, now we get down to the brass tacks of this conversation. It's not so much that we don't philosophically agree that genomics would be helpful. It's the, you know, it's the privacy. It's all the other. This, you know, as everyone in this room knows, 90% of what we do on a day-to-day is not a technical problem. These are policy issues completely. So, you know, you go down to your vet population, our DOD activate, and we're like, we're going to collect your genomics because we have their DNA, but we're going to put it up in the cloud so people can take a look to see what's going on. You know, like, hello? You know, that's – so these – I think this is going to be just like – I'll go back – you know, 10 years ago, who thought you would be banking online every day? And I use that because everybody comes to my office to tell me about the banking industry. I don't know why, but so I'll throw it back at y'all. Like, so 10 years ago, who thought we would be banking online, right? So I think I'm going to go back. This is a radical paradigm shift, and I just don't think as a nation, as a clinical community, as a patient community, we are ready to have that. My genomics are available somewhere online. I think you're just a decade in front of us.
And I've got to agree with everything Captain Weiner just said. The technology is not the hardest part. We can do it. We can collect it. We can normalize it. But it's the – this is about people. It's about individuals. It's about what they believe, what they perceive, and that does either help or it does hinder. And so I'm learning tremendous things on this endeavor I've been on for the last 6 months. About the perspectives and my thoughts, and the reason why I was kind of trying to be delicate about how you answered with regard to being an IT or clinical is, I thought I knew how to listen to a physician, and I found out recently that I really don't, because the philosophical motivations that go into the control of care and how it's delivered are not always, I'll just say, for lack of better terms, a given. And I think this would be a hugely different discussion on innovation and transformation and what we're doing if you were amongst your clinical peers without IT people up here. So all of that's got to be factored in. It is not a slam. None of this is a slam dunk, especially when you get into some of those dicey issues on genomics.
So there's a little bit of a parallel activity going on here that anybody here of open government? We have an open government directive that encourages transparency, participation, collaboration, et cetera. So at HHS, we are thinking about, you know, the opportunities to be more transparent and to allow people to participate more and to collaborate more. And so you heard a mention of personal health records. So, you know, this is an opportunity possibly to present information to those that have the authorization to see that who actually owns that data without presenting it to the nation in general. We are now within the construct of transparency looking at different types of re-identification methodologies, because obviously if we're going to make information, de-identified information available in larger and larger and larger quantities, then the opportunity for triangulating back to the identification becomes more real. And so we're spending a lot of time trying to ensure that as we put this information out there under the Open Government Directive, that we satisfy the privacy and confidentiality requirements and responsibilities that we actually hold. And so that's what's really, really holding this up. You know, you can put data out in large quantities, but it's a question of should you.
Okay. Go in the back.
Well, hello.
Hi, Ed. Can you? Hi, Ed. Tom Hughes, I'm with CSC now. I have a question and a comment, and I like your prediction. And then my first comment is, the new Healthcare Reform Act talks so much about how employers have to provide information to state exchanges, have to provide information to the Internal Revenue Service on health care, on the amount that they're receiving, benefits of that nature, maybe even into the W-2. So there's a massive amount of health care information that will be passed around on the W-2 or on exchanges that won't have medical information, but it'll have an identity. I'll know what Ed's health care is, if it's family or what. My point is, that's almost, that number obviously is going to be the Social Security number. It's going to be a default that I can figure out at a health exchange. If I'm given insurance, am I going to give insurance to a new unique number that defaults to the Social Security number? So it's almost becoming, I'm suggesting to you, and if you get fined for not paying your health care, it goes back to your Social Security number and your IRS when you're getting the refund. So is it not becoming the de facto default, whether we like it or not, based on the health care bill? That helps you in a way, because it then moves you to where you can say, well, I'm following procedure. But then that leads to my next point, which is, will you be able to take that information, have identity then standardized, and move that to another agency that wants to collect your standardized health care record now in that format? I mean, do you see that? To me, that's the likelihood of how this will go forward. And when will the standardized information be able to be accessible to other agencies? Can you comment?
Okay. I think your observations are accurate, that there is an area of opportunity here that whether we want to move in that direction or not may evolve. And that's specifically the type of thing that I was talking about previously, where if one type of information is presented using, you know, a certain format, and then you try and equate that back to another, sometimes, you know, you have unintended consequences there where too much information is then available. Now, you couple that with the fact that we have a directive to reduce the use of the Social Security number across the federal space, and so you can see the conflict that we have here, and so this is clearly on our mind. We don't have the answer for this yet, but as we move forward with implementation of the act, hopefully we'll reach clarity on how best to do that and how best to present information in an appropriate way. So I don't really have a solid answer for you on that, except that we are very mindful of it.
I would only add, welcome to democracy in America. You know, it's Social Security number, I think we all agree, is not necessarily the best, but it's the most ubiquitous. It's what's out there. And, you know, do you go there by default or do you start something new? But it's really, it has nothing to do with IT. It has nothing to do with medicine. It has to do with public policy. And those are the kinds that really, because here's what happens. Either those decisions, public policy decisions, get made and these folks react to it, or those non-decisions become speed bumps, and they react to those. And, you know, it's you can only do what your authority allows you to do. And so that's one of those key, again, as Scott pointed out, that identity management issue is this big 600-pound speed bump. And either we're going to work around it or we're going to take it on. You know, it's not up to anyone here in this panel. Over here. Go ahead.
Hi. John, it's your question, Savant. My question is a very different nature from what we've heard so far. From my perspective, we know that VA and DOD are creating their own joint interoperable health records and sharing data in that area. The goal is to have electronic health records fully functional for the whole country very shortly. You have billions of dollars in grant money going out to states, each in their own way, building their own information exchanges to eventually where it will all be able to be shareable via the Health Information Network, at least as one place where it can be nationwide accessible for that electronic health record. But a number of technical standards have not even yet been defined, and yet all of this money has been going and is being spent, has been spent. And so I'm just curious from especially because you all are the biggest doers of a lot of this data sharing and working together and building in that area, and from the governance perspective, what is going in to ensure that those standards are clear so that what people are doing now are leading us to full interoperability via the NHN at some point?
Okay, so there's a number of things that are going on. Actually, I have to say that because we are providing incentives for electronic health record adoptions beginning in 2011, we are in somewhat of a sprint right now to identify the specifications that would represent the meaningful use of an electronic health record in those core use case areas. So so that is going on. We've engaged a number of organizations to provide opinions on that. We're working with the private sector in many areas on that. So what will eventually happen is these specifications, and I just want to say that, you know, this has been going on for quite some time, and we've got a lot of history that took us to a particular point in standards evolution and then stopped. And so now what we're doing is we are engaged in a sprint that will take those standards and fully orchestrate, you know, the services according to specifications for meaningful use that will be clear enough, and so that if implemented according to that specification, interoperability will be assured. So there's been a big shift in how we look at these things, because in the past what we've tried to do is tried not to insert ourselves into areas of standard selection that might be perceived as declaring winners and losers, et cetera, et cetera. But we've come to the point now where we recognize that we need to engage with the healthcare community, and we need to make some of those decisions that will actually allow us to move forward. And so that's a paradigm shift that I think is going to be very valuable. And we are also just recently, you've probably seen the award of grants for regional extension centers. And so those are going to be put in place out there so that the money that people are actually using and the efforts that they're using or they're engaged in to implement electronic health records can be channeled in the right direction so that we avoid making mistakes that where we diverge. And so this becomes a resource that is now intended to be used nationwide from the physicians, the one doc office to the larger hospitals. If they need the help, then that's intended for them to get that help. And so those are a couple of different things that are going on that will lead us in the right direction, I believe.
I'm going to have to call a halt here. We're running out of time. I want to say that, you know, I think it's an indication of just how hot a topic and how important a topic it is, that how many questions and hands we had in the air at the end. I also want to take a moment to recognize, you know, if you haven't been in a executive position in government, as these three gentlemen are, when all of a sudden, and like I said, a lot of these guys are type A guys, they've been chasing the bus, now they've caught it, and all of a sudden now they're in the decision-making, policy-making, implementation roles, and if you haven't ever been in that position, it's a fairly daunting 24/7, a lot more than you thought. These three gentlemen are in those positions, and I'd like to first thank them for their time and also thank them for their service to good government.
All right. So officially want to thank, and this is the conclusion of the luncheon, want to thank the captain, want to thank Scott, John, and, of course, Ed. I have a parting shot, which is being an IT propeller head to some extent as well. I always ask the question in my running around town and talking on IT is, if you would have thought that we'd be using the Internet the way we do today, right, even 10 years ago or 15 when it first popped out, you couldn't say you would be. And unfortunately, with the paradigm shift that does need to occur, let's hope it doesn't take 10 years to move to what the financial community, at least, or the industry is doing in regard to electronic records. So thanks again. I thought it was entertaining. We obviously will have more dialogue on this in the year to come. So thanks for coming out. Big John.